Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 45 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. I can't do it as fancy as you. I tried to, but that's okay. All right. Anyway, this is Adam, and I am joined by your host, Jill. How are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, as always. You want to maybe let us know what this episode is all about?
Yes. Today's episode is all about nonfiction.
Nice.
Yay, I know. We do mostly fiction.
Yeah.
And we do mostly, I mean, nonfiction is sometimes sprinkled in, but
yeah, but I think we've only done like one
we have,
dedicated
yeah,
otherwise
right.
in this.
So this is all nonfiction, and I sit down with one of our coworkers, and we just talk a whole bunch of nonfiction. There wasn't really a theme to it. I just said, bring whatever recent nonfiction you've read. So it's very wide open. We cover a lot of topics. So, yeah, it was fun. It was fun for our nonfiction listeners.
And it's one of our rare sort of like one-on-one in the office. There's usually a whole gaggle of people in there. So it was
a gaggle.
Yeah. Well, there's usually three, which isn't a gaggle at all. But
just the two of us.
She was
good.
Newcomer,
she's
right?
a newcomer.
And it was Christy.
Yeah,
I was just making sure. I always get this all. There's nothing worse than when I'm sitting in one of the podcasts and I know all these people and I'm good friends and I'll stare at them and I'll be like, and it's good to see, oh no, I don't remember, wait, and I have the panic and I don't ever want to re-record, so.
I know, anyway. She emailed me and she said that, she said she misspoke about something she thinks she remembers from the podcast about author Mary Roach having a story in a collection and ended up Mary Roach edited this scientific writing collection, but she wasn't actually a historian. I was like, that happens to all of us. We've all misspoken at some point. Don't worry.
Not only have you and I misspoke about a title or when it's coming out or who wrote it, but the amount of times we mispronounce people's names is just...
I think that happened this one, too. I have no idea.
I think I said in the past, it's not an episode if we don't mispronounce at least one name, so that's okay. Where can people find us if they want to get a hold of us?
They can find us on Facebook and Twitter, and they can email us directly at feedback@overdrive.com.
Yes, they can.
Job well done. Thank you.
One thing on a kind of a sadder note, I want to point this out. So in the past, you and I have talked about our love of certain celebrities and, you know, David Bowie and Alan Rickman.
Don't start.
I know, I'm sorry, but...
No, 2016 has been a bad year.
2016 has been a horrible year, and... You and I both have an affinity, again, a very deep-rooted love of Bowie and Alan Rickman, and another one of those people, for me, was Gene Wilder. And,
yep.
I mean, it's not like it's tragic. He was a little bit older. I don't think people realize how old he was. Yeah, he was in his 80s, and he did have dementia, and so he'd been sick for a little while, but nonetheless, I was crushed when I saw that he had passed away, and I'm someone who... Some of the movies, in addition to like The Labyrinth and all the stuff we've talked about in the past, the movies that I grew up watching, because I'm the youngest of four, I would get like Blazing Saddles and you know, Young Frankenstein and The Producers, movies that I probably shouldn't have been watching when I was little.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about Blazing
Especially
Saddles.
Blazing Saddles, yeah. Actually, I have a friend whose dad just like sat us down and we watched that one day and we're like, I don't know if this is what we're supposed to be watching. But anyway, I wanted to give a shout out. I mean, he was Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka.
So if you want to say, why are they talking about this on a book podcast?
Willy Wonka.
There you go. So anyway, I'm not going to get super emotional or cheesy, but I just wanted to give a little shout out to Gene Wilder, because I know that this weekend I will be watching all of his movies for the 100th time. So anyway, again, didn't want to be a downer, but I wanted to throw that out there. So anything else you think people should know about before they dive into some book recommendations?
If they want to see a list of all the recommendations, they can find them on our listeners and our readers can find them on overdrive.com. Our library partners can find them in Marketplace, and we also have them on Pinterest as well.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, I'm excited for you guys to hear this episode. And if there's anything else, all good?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, enjoy this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast presented by Overdrive. This is your host, Jill, and I have with me Christy. Hi, Christy.
Hey, Jill.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
Good. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
It's your first time. We're going to talk about books. It's going to be a lot of fun. And today we are specifically talking about nonfiction books, which we don't always talk a lot about on the podcast, so this is good. We'll get some new titles out there. So is there anything you've read recently that you've really enjoyed?
Oh, yeah. I just finished a great book called Romantic Outlaws, and the subtitle of it is very long, but The Extraordinary Lives of Mary Wollstonecraft and Her Daughter Mary Shelley.
Oh.
It's by Charlotte Gordon, and it's a double biography. She switches back and forth one chapter at a time, Mary Wollstonecraft, one chapter Mary Shelley. Mary Wollstonecraft wrote A Vindication of the Rights of Women, mm-hmm. and Mary Shelley, of course, wrote Frankenstein.
Right.
So that in itself would probably have made for a good book, but they just both had fascinating, exciting lives.
Yeah.
So it was a great read. I hesitate to say I read like a soap opera because I don't want it to seem like it was...
Just maybe a lot of dramatic moments?
Lots of... like, for example, Mary Wollstonecraft went to France to cover the French Revolution and was there during the Reign of Terror.
Wow.
And so just all sorts of events that they had in their lives, each woman had in her life, that was just fascinating. Their love life.
Oh, sure.
Their children. It was just a great read.
That sounds really good. Okay. I recently finished this book called This Is Not My Life by, I'm going to totally mispronounce this name and I apologize, Diane, I think it's Schoeperlin, something like that. She's a Canadian author, and this was a memoir she wrote. She had dated and was involved with a man who was incarcerated that she met while volunteering.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she volunteered at like a soup kitchen type thing, and he and some of the other inmates would come in as well, and she met him that way, and they started as friends, and then the relationship progressed, and it was really, really fascinating. And I used to be a prison librarian, and so I had this like weird interest in prison memoirs and prison type things, and so reading this and seeing it from like the perspective of someone on the outside looking in, sort of, and then the challenges that come with dating and being in a, you know, romantic relationship with someone who is incarcerated was really interesting, and the challenges that come from that sort of situation. So it was a good read. I enjoyed that. Yeah. Anything else?
Also, on sort of the topic of crime and punishment, I also recently read a book called Dreamland, The True Tales of America's Opiate Epidemic.
Oh, okay.
By Sam Quinones. And actually, both this title and Romantic Outlaws both received National Book Critics Circle Awards. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at that list. So
sure.
I want to read that one, and I want to read that one. And the title is actually... The story of how he, you know, comes up with the title for the book is interesting. Dreamland was actually the name of a water park in Portsmouth, Ohio. And he sort of starts out, he centers a lot of the narrative of the book in and around Portsmouth, Ohio.
Okay.
Because it was pretty hard hit by opiate abuse. He covers sort of the story of the people dealing the drugs, the people addicted to the drugs, prescription, opiate abuse, mm-hmm. and all of those things he weaves together to make a very interesting and compelling story of heroin abuse and opiate abuse. And I thought it was really interesting, especially because I know in Ohio there's Ohio's been pretty hard hit by heroin overdose deaths in the
yes.
past few years.
Yes.
And reading that book helps put that in perspective.
Okay. That sounds good. That's interesting. Yeah, especially since it would sort of hit home a little bit more for those of us who live here in Ohio, because that's a very big problem that we have here, for sure. On a lighter note, I read a book called Cracking the Cube by Ian Scheffler, and it is about the Rubik's Cube.
What?
Yeah, and so it's actually about competitive Rubik's Cube playing. And there are competitions that people have where they compete to solve the Rubik's Cube as fast as they can. And some of them are very, very fast. I, like, reading this book, and he had done it, like, as a kid. He sort of grew up in that era, and then later found out about this competition, and he decided to start learning how to do it again and try and enter these competitions. And some of the people, they solve it so quickly. I actually had to go, like, on YouTube and look up videos, because I didn't believe it could be done this fast. But it's, I mean, within, like, seconds, they just, the math and the logic of how you solve the Rubik's Cube and the techniques, it's really fascinating. And he also talks just about, like, the history of it and how it came about as a game, and how it's really taken off over the past couple of decades since it was introduced. So I highly recommend that if you are into sort of any kind of sports or competition type things, because Rubik's Cube competitions are apparently a thing.
Do you get to know any of the players?
You do, yeah. He sort of focuses on a handful of players that, and he keeps meeting them at different competitions, because it's sort of a small, it's like a circuit where there's different competitions they can go to, and yeah, he kind of follows up with some of them and how they're doing. It was fun. It was a fun read. I liked it. I can't solve a Rubik's Cube, but this kind of made me want to. So.
And it's just called The Cube?
It's called Cracking the Cube.
Oh, Cracking the Cube.
Cracking the Cube, yes. So, that was a good one. Just came out a couple months ago. So, that's a personal question. What is it that you like so much about nonfiction?
I like that every once in a while it becomes apparent that what I don't know on a topic could fill a warehouse.
It's true.
And when you pick up a nonfiction book, then you can at least tell yourself that you learned a little bit more about
something. That's a good way of looking at it. I like it.
Yeah. Actually, funny enough, I was just talking with some coworkers the other day about book clubs that mm-hmm. we had when we were growing up in
yeah.
our local libraries, and we had one at my local library called the Dewey Dabbler.
I love it.
Which was like, you got a cutout with a picture of Caterpillar, and you had to like get a sticker for each of the different Dewey Decimal.
That is amazing.
Sections. Yeah, so like for a first or second grader, that was a great way to hook you on reading nonfiction.
Yeah.
Because you had to fill up the caterpillar eventually.
I kind of love that idea. I sort of want to do it as an adult now.
I kind of do too. It would take me a lot longer because adult nonfiction
We
books.
Should do it here at Overdrive.
I can start
We should create
out.
Our own Dewey Dabbler. That is so fun because, yeah, there's so many, like, it's just, there's so many different types and the Dewey numbers out there that you can have a lot of fun picking books, but it probably would take a little bit longer now.
yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I like the idea that, I don't know, some of the books that I read is one of those, like, truth is stranger than fiction sort of situations mm-hmm. where you just sort of are reading this book and you have to constantly remind yourself, this like, actually happened. This is a true story, and sometimes it's just so bizarre or things you wouldn't have known before, like with, you know, the Shelley and Wollstonecraft, and I don't know. Yeah, I like the true story aspect of it, and just knowing it's real and it actually happened, it sort of makes it a little more like a permanent spot in life, sort of. Do you have any favorites from when you were growing up or even now?
When I was growing up.
I know, I'm trying to think if I actually read that much nonfiction when I was growing up.
I know I've got like some in the past 10 years that I've
that'll
read
work.
That I think still hold up.
Yeah, that'll work.
Let's see. I know when I was thinking about nonfiction titles, one of the ones that I thought of that I think does still hold up is Paradox of Choice by Barry Schwartz.
I have not read that one.
It is, he just takes a look at how you make decisions, how hard it can be to make decisions.
Okay.
And I think maybe Aziz Ansari mentioned it during Modern Romance.
He might have, yeah.
He was talking about the plethora of choices
that
you have.
Sounds vaguely familiar.
But, yeah, I think that's one case where it shows that even though that book came out a few years ago, it's still very, very relevant. And I will admit that it's hard for me to make choices, but that was a book that I read and I was like, I can take some of this and apply it. I can make a choice and be comfortable with what I chose.
I may have to look into that because I am horrible about making choices as well.
It's a good one.
That's good to know. I always liked anything by Bill Bryson, the travel writer. He's so funny. He is American by birth, but then he sort of kind of became an expatriate. And then at one point he moved back to America, and then I think he lives in England again now. But he just writes these hilarious books about these vacations and travels that he goes on. The one that he's probably most well known for is A Walk in the Woods. He and his friend went and decided to go on the Appalachian Trail. I can't pronounce that word, sorry. and, like, hiked the Appalachian Trail. And along the way, he sort of does the history of the trail, like how it became what it is now, and also just their own experiences out camping and in the wildlife. And it's absolutely hilarious. And then he has some where he's gone to, I think, in a sunburned country. It's one in Australia. Mm-hmm. And he's done a couple of ones in England as well. He recently, a couple years ago, he and his family moved to a country home in England. And he wrote a book basically about the history of houses and like how each room in a house kind of came to be. Like, huh. The living room or the dining room or the kitchen. I mean, yeah, it's like a whole micro history on houses. I can't remember what it's called. I want to think it's called like Home or House. I don't remember. But he just has this very dry sense of humor. And I always, it's a sort of thing. I learn a lot of stuff about places I've maybe never been or will never go. So that kind of makes it a fun little escape in its own way. So.
So back to the house. What was there like a room?
It's called At Home, A Short History of Private Life. Yeah.
Okay. Was there a room that like had the best story?
I don't really. It's been a while since I read it. It was just the whole thing. I don't know. Yeah, the description. They live in a part of England. One day he began to consider how very little he knew about the ordinary things of life as he found it in the comfortable home. And so he just sort of goes room by room, writing a history of each room and sort of what it provides in terms of just sort of everyday life. It was really interesting.
Huh.
Yeah.
I might have to pick that one up.
You should, yeah. Yeah, the idea of, like, micro-histories and sort of, like, taking one solitary subject or, like, one thing and then just, like, really digging in deep on its history is, like, a whole nonfiction genre. I haven't read that many of, but they're really, I mean, you have to do a lot of research on those. Like, there's entire books on history of paper. And, like, different kinds of food. So, that takes a lot of dedication as a researcher and a writer. So, I don't know. It's good stuff. Yeah, good stuff. So, that he's one of my favorites. Is Bill Bryson, for sure. Yeah. So, do you remember, like, was there any one nonfiction book that really got you hooked on nonfiction, do you think?
I don't I can't think of like a turning point. There's always, just always been a good, probably since about high school.
Okay.
I think, I can't even remember what the book was called, but my history teacher junior of high school was like, everybody has to read a book that's not the textbook.
Fair.
And I ended up reading one on Gilded Age history.
It was
really engrossing. Unfortunately, I don't remember.
That's okay. No, that's okay.
But it kind of, you know, I think that got me thinking that in addition to fiction, there's a lot of, there's nonfiction out there that can be just as beautifully written.
Mm-hmm.
And on that topic, when I do think of like history, nonfiction history books that I always like to read, I always like to read Eric Larson.
Yes, yes.
He did Devil in the White City, and I think when people think of that book, they think of the H.H. Holmes murder part a lot, but then there's also the other whole half with Daniel Burnham, the architect.
That, yes. Like, the whole building of the World's Fair.
Yeah.
I find that so compelling. And just trying to imagine this whole, like, world within a world that existed right in the middle of Chicago.
and he makes it feel like you're there.
He does.
There's, you know, I think he puts, like, a menu from some dinner that some people in the book went to in there at some point. And, he really establishes that sense of place for that book. I'm currently reading another one of his called Thunderstruck.
Oh, I heard about that one.
Which is not about AC/DC.
Darn it.
Unfortunate.
Darn it.
But it's about something just as good.
Okay.
It's another thing like Devil in the White City where he's pairing a murder story along with a story of innovation. He's got the murderer's name was Holly Crippen.
Okay.
And he's pairing it with the story of Guglielmo Marconi and the wireless radio.
Oh.
So I just started that one, but I'm really looking forward to burning through that one pretty quickly.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I like his books. He writes, sounds weird, but he writes like fiction. Like they read like fiction. They're very fluid and there's definitely a storytelling narrative to the books, which make them really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you read his newest one about the Lusitania?
I have read like half of it. I have this horrible problem. There's just too many books here.
Mm-hmm.
It's too many books here working in overdrive, and so like I'll start one and I'll be like, this other book comes out, and I'll be like, oh, it looks so good. I'm bad about completing books now. But I had started to read that. I think I have it somewhere. Yeah. So it was good from when I started with it. Yeah. He's just a really good writer, and he just makes things super interesting and captivating, and really he holds your attention well. Because I think nonfiction sometimes, depending on the writer, it might be a little try sometimes, depending. I don't know. But he does a good job of keeping things interesting, which I appreciate.
I agree.
Yeah. For history, I also like Alison Weir. She writes a lot of Tudor history. And I actually came to her through fiction because I read Philip Gregory's The Other Boleyn Girl years ago when it first came out, and I really enjoyed it, but knowing it was fiction, I wanted to read nonfiction about this time period. And so Alison Weir had a whole book on the Six Wives of Henry VIII, and I just, like, blew through it. It was so good. I mean, it's a dense book, but it was so good, and just so, like, I didn't know much about that period of history or really anything about the wives, so reading about all of that drama, talking about a soap opera, like, and she has a whole bunch of books, mostly about the Tudors, but she does do some other English royalty family as well. Like, I think she has a book on Eleanor of Aquitaine, and but it's historical, but they're really good. It's the same kind of thing, so That's my sort of thing. Anything on the Tudors, I will happily read. So, lots of books out there. So, is there anything coming out in the future or recently have come out that maybe you would are looking forward to reading?
Well, I know Siddhartha Mukherjee in the past few months put out a book called The Gene, An Intimate History.
I've heard about that one.
He wrote The Emperor of All Maladies, which was about cancer, and this one is about genetics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to checking that out. I was, along that line, I was trying to think of science books that I have enjoyed, and I was sort of struggling, unfortunately, because I love learning about science. So I knew, like, I was like, Siddhartha Mukherjee, good choice. And then I was like, and who else? So I was talking to a friend over the weekend who was raving about Mary Roach.
Oh, yes. She's so good.
Right.
Yes.
Well, have you read anything of hers?
I read, what was it called? What was the, going to bother me because I'm not going to remember the one about the dead people.
Stiff.
I read Stiff. Yes, and she had one just come out too recently.
Grunt.
Yes.
The Curious Science of Humans at War.
Yes.
So I think I'm going to start with that one and then move through some of her other topics.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful to that friend for recommending that. I also know that, like, they put out volumes of the best American science and nature writing every year, so I think her work might have been featured in one of those volumes.
Okay.
But they're, like, a good way to read some pieces on science that are a little shorter.
Sure. So you like the science type?
I do, yeah. It's... sometimes they're hard to find. The other book that I have pinned on my list of science books to check out, I found on the list of books that the journal Science has reviewed over the past year.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's called The Cabaret of Plants by Richard Mabey. And it's what it sounds like. It's about plants. Which I think is interesting because it sounds like he's taking closer looks at different types of plants.
Okay.
He has chapters titled, he has one about, like, Wordsworth and Keats, which is this whole section on romantic writers.
Right.
And plants. So that looked interesting to me, especially coming off of reading the Mary Wollstonecraft, Mary Shelley.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good tie-in.
Keats shows up in that book.
He would show up, yeah. That would make sense.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to reading The Cabaret of Plants and learning some more about the natural world.
So I do enjoy science stuff. I do find it a little intimidating sometimes. So if someone wanted to start maybe reading a little bit more, do you have a good access point as, like, a first book or an author they could look for? And now I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit.
Yeah. I know when I was in high school, and these are older books now, but Richard Feynman?
Okay.
Who I believe is a physicist, he wrote about science in a way that it was very
a little more accessible.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did like his stuff. But other than that...
That's okay. I was just curious, because I think, like, now I think people are getting... People who aren't maybe into science naturally or haven't really been into science growing up are... Science is cool now, I guess, is sort of what I'm saying. And so, but again, it can maybe be a little, you know, inaccessible if you don't have a background or history with it. So, just trying to find ways to get books for our readers.
Oh, how was I overlooking it? The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks.
Oh,
that is a very good, if you want to know something, know more about science,
That is an excellent, yes.
Very accessible read.
For sure.
Very gripping read.
Yes. That was a good one. Yes. See? You did great. It's awesome.
Just had to think about it for okay.
Yeah, sometimes you just need your brain to work a little bit. Yeah. Let's see. I had a list. Where did mine go? There's a book coming out this month on August 23rd called Blood in the Water. It's by Heather Ann Thompson. Going back to my weird prison stuff, it's about the Attica prison uprising, which is a prison riot back in the 70s. It's a big book. It's like, I think I read one of the reviews. It's like, I want to say 700 pages. I might be overestimating that. It might be 500 only, but it's a big book. But she spent a lot of time researching what happened during the prison riots, and I am really looking forward to reading that because I clearly like prison stuff. I don't know, whatever. It's a weird thing. So that comes out in August, and on topic, actually, now that I think about it, of science and sort of along with Henrietta Lacks, there's a book that just came out called Patient HM by Luke Dietrich, and it is sort of a medical memoir. And there was an epileptic patient who went by in the studies on him by HM, his initials. And the author's grandfather did a sort of new technique of a lobotomy on him. I mean, this is like way back when that was sort of the standard epilepsy thing, to try and stop the seizures. And he didn't stop the seizures, but whatever he did during the lobotomy left HM amnesic. Like, he has no memory. And so it's sort of, he became this sort of case study of memory and trying to sort of understand memory more. And so that just came out, and I'm really looking forward to reading that one. Because that, like, the whole, yeah, like, memory, like, it's in your brain, obviously, mm-hmm. but it's not like, I don't know, it's so hard to explain memory, you know, like, it
right.
like that it has a place in your brain and it's clearly a thing that's there, but it also seems so kind of fluid and like out in the ether, like it shouldn't have like a permanent place. I don't know. I don't know if I'm describing it well.
Yeah, that sounds like something I would enjoy reading, because, again, a topic that I know nothing
yeah,
about.
I know. That's why, like, I hadn't really thought about how that works. Like, I know amnesia is a thing and that you can sort of lose your memories, but never really thinking about how that happens and that someone could just sort of be doing something in your brain, trying to do something else, and they just hit that magic button that exists and sort of, so that sounds good. So, I think that's all I have for stuff coming out, but is there anything else that's come out recently that you're looking to read?
I don't know how recently it came out,
that's
but
okay.
I did come across a book the other day called Pistols at Dawn, A History of Dueling.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I want to read this book. Yes, the author is John Norris, and I feel like, especially with the Hamilton craze,
yes,
it's. I think the summary for this, you know, whatever's on the back cover for the book, basically is, I think, brings up the point that this happened.
Yeah,
people used to do this to each
other. They did, I know.
So that I am very curious about, because whenever they explain it in movies and stuff, it sounds like it's very much there were rules and
yeah.
So I want to know more about how this all started, and you know how we decided to move beyond that and resolve our differences in other ways. But Pistols at Dawn, really looking forward to reading that one.
That sounds really good.
I don't know how new it is, but
that's okay. And Adam will be very happy we mentioned Hamilton. Hamilton gets mentioned, like, in almost every episode, just by accident half the time. So, that's good. Okay. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today.
Well, thanks for having
me. Of course. I hope you had fun.
I did. Yeah.
Good. So we'll probably have to have you back in a future episode. So these are just some of the nonfiction books that we have been reading. There's lots more out there. I'm sure we'll do future episodes with more nonfiction books. And if there's any nonfiction books you have read and really enjoyed, feel free to email us at feedback@overdrive.com and share your thoughts. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. Bye, everybody.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
Coming up on 5 Minute News, I'm Anthony Davis. You might think it's partisan because maybe it's critical of one side or the other, but it's not. It's just the truth. And I think that's also something that's kind of unusual for Americans listening to the radio or to podcasts, because the news landscape in the States has been so partisan for so many decades. So 5 Minute News is verified, truthful, independent, unbiased, and essential world news daily.